evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, January 9th, 2015. The South Sudan Census Bureau says it will rely on data from 2008 to allow elections to proceed later this year.
The elections will have to be standalone. It should not be contingent on the conduct of census because of the current situation.
And ANMI says it has evidence showing atrocities on both sides, including more than 280 civilians killed in Bentiu Mosque by rebel forces.
The report concludes that there are reasonable grounds to believe that at least 353 civilians were murdered and another 250 wounded in the two attacks.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The government institution charged with conducting a census in South Sudan says it will not be able to hold the population headcount before this year's general elections, which are set to be held at the end of June. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Statistics Bureau Chairman Isaiah Chol Arwai told VOA in Juba that the Bureau has not yet begun collecting census data that are supposed to provide the basis for holding elections at the end of June. South Sudan's transitional constitution calls for a census to be held to determine, among other things, quote, the number of electoral constituencies for the next general elections. But Arwai says the Bureau's failure to produce census results ahead of the elections should not stop the polls from taking place.
Under normal situation, the census was supposed to precede the elections. That was when there was no political crisis in the country. But as we speak, the context has changed. It looks like the elections will have to be standalone. It should not be contingent on the conduct of census because of the current situation. And that is a political decision. It is not a technical decision.
Since it was created in 2011, the National Bureau of Statistics has not produced any census results. Arwai previously cited financial constraints as the reason for not holding a population headcount. Now he is citing security challenges. Preliminary activities related to the census are underway, however, but Arwai says he cannot predict when the Bureau will be able to release data it has collected. He says unless peace is restored in South Sudan, the results cannot be expected soon. President Salva Kiir's administration announced last month that it has approved a budget of $517 million for the elections in which South Sudanese will elect a president, lawmakers, and state governors. A week later, the National Elections Commission said the elections will be held on June 30th. Opposition politicians, civil society groups, and even refugees in Uganda have all spoken out against the holding elections while the country is still in crisis. Some have noted that the transitional constitution requires that a census be held before elections are organized. But Benny Gideon Mabor, a civil society activist working with the South Sudan Law Society and a representative of South Sudan civil society groups at Peace Talks in Addis Ababa, says the lack of census results
does not matter because a population census is not basically meant for election. Of course, you might have heard that census in most of the jurisdiction is done after every 10 years. And elections can take place after every 4 years in other countries. It can take place after every 5 years in other countries and as well as after every 7 years in other countries. So you can see that census is truly not a primary requirement in order for election to take place.
Mabor says it was the government that made a mistake by saying in the transitional constitution that a census has to be held before elections. But he says as controversial as the elections may be, they can be held on June 30th. To do that, he says population data from a census conducted in 2008 before South Sudan was an independent nation can be used. Arwai says the Elections Commission will have to decide which census data it will use.
What I know is that they will have to use the 2008 population figures because there's no any other reliable figures that they will have to use. I think the challenge will be the question of drawing the electoral consistencies. But there are technicalities involved. I think they will have to be worked out by the Electoral Commission.
The 2008 census was conducted by the Sudanese government before the historic 2011 referendum that created South Sudan. The results, which estimated South Sudan's population to be around 8 million, were rejected by the government of what was then Southern Sudan. Officials cited numerous anomalies in the conduct of the census and disagreed with the 8 million estimate. Government officials insist the vote must be conducted by June of this year, but face challenges, including the absence of reliable census data, which will make it difficult to determine electoral constituencies, and a separate issue of the need to register political parties. The lack of census data is likely to cast doubt on the legitimacy of the June vote. South Sudan's constitution does not stipulate when elections have to be held, but does say that President Kiir's tenure will end on July 9th this year. Despite some objections from countries like the United States of America, the Elections Commission is determined to hold the elections in just 5 months' time. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Udo from Juba.
The United Nations peacekeeping mission in South Sudan today says it has uncovered evidence that hundreds of civilians were killed by both warring parties in the now 13-month-old conflict. A 33-page report revealed by the UNMISS Human Rights Section outlines, among other things, the deadly aftermath of attacks at mosque in Bantu and a protection of civilian sites in Bor. Philip Thorn Aleu has the details from Juba.
UNMISS spokesman Joe Contreras says UNMISS human rights officials conducted a thorough investigation into the reports of serious abuses in Unity and Jonglei states.
Based on the collection and analysis of physical evidence and interviews with 142 sources, the report concludes that there are reasonable grounds to believe that at least 353 civilians were murdered and another 250 wounded in the two attacks. The report found that in both Bantu and Bor, victims were deliberately targeted on the basis of their ethnicity, nationality, or perceived support for one of the parties to the conflict.
Contreras says the report concludes that at least 287 civilians were killed at a mosque in the Kalibelek area of Bantu by opposition forces after they regained control of the Unity State capital on the morning of April 15th. The report says many of those killed were Sudanese traders and their families who were targeted on the basis of their Darfurese origin. In addition, the report says at least 19 civilians were killed at the Bantu Civic Hospital that same day. Contreras says UNMISS is calling on the government and opposition to ensure justice for the victims.
Nearly 9 months after the attacks took place, no perpetrator has been held accountable by either the government of the Republic of South Sudan or the Sudan People's Liberation Movement Army in opposition. The report contains a set of recommendations that includes a call on all parties to the South Sudan crisis to immediately end all fighting, halt abuses and gross violations of human rights, and respect the inviolability of United Nations personnel and premises.
Judy Jonglei Boyeris, the Minister of Information in Jonglei State, says the state government has little information on an investigation being conducted by a committee formed by President Salva Kiir last year. The specific intent was to record human rights abuses.
I don't think anybody has been arrested. The investigation was carried out by the committee set up by President Salva Kiir, and that committee came here in the state and investigated the incidents of the 15th of December and April.
Both government and opposition forces fledged to investigate the reports of targeted killings, post-abduction, post-detentions, and rape since the conflict began more than a year ago. But so far, no suspects have been identified, charged, or tried in a court of law. For VOA News, I am Philip Thona Leu in Juba.
Still on issues about the conflict in South Sudan, a non-profit organization is donating solar-powered lights to families living in camps for internally displaced persons in Upper Nile State. The hope is that having lights will reduce the prevalence of rape cases in the camps and allow children to read at night. Stacey Bent is one of the founders of the Carry the Light to the World Foundation. She says a shipment of donated solar-powered lights will be sent to South Sudan in March. Bent is optimistic that the lights will change life in IDP camps in Upper Nile State, where thousands of South Sudanese have sought refuge during the one-year conflict in the country.
Our goal is to help alleviate energy poverty through the distribution of power solar lighting. Right now, we are working in partnership with the Episcopal Church of Southern Sudan and trying to get lights into two refugee camps in the Upper Nile region.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon say in a recent report about children in South Sudan that the UN has documented dozens of cases of girls and boys who have been victims of sexual violence since South Sudan erupted in violence in December 2013, and believes there are many more cases that have gone unreported. In an interview with South Sudan in Focus last month, the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, said that the fighting in South Sudan has, quote, very seriously exacerbated gender-based violence. The IRC says more women are being attacked when they go about doing the most necessary activities, including using latrines or going out to get food for their families. The solar-powered lights that carry the light to the World Foundation will be sending to South Sudan are small handheld torches with a solar panel on one side. The panel charges during the day and allows light to be used at night. Bent says she hopes the solar-powered lights will help keep women safe.
First reason is that by empowering a woman by putting independent, lightweight, solar-powered light in her hands, she is able to illuminate the perpetrator, and 9 times out of 10, the perpetrator will run away.
The Anglican Bishop of Reng Diocese in Upper Nile State agrees that the vulnerable groups need urgent help. Joseph Garang Atem says the number of IDPs in Upper Nile State keeps increasing because of the ongoing fighting between the army and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. He says help from Carry the Light to the World Foundation comes at the right time.
There is many displaced camps. But we would begin with the serious need, the children and the women, like midwife, they need it, and the children at the school because they want to study, of course. And the sick people, which are the clinic, I mean, which do not have any light.
Bishop Atem says protecting women against rape should be the first priority of any aid agency operating in Upper Nile State. Carry the Light to the World Foundation says their mission in Upper Nile is just that, to help reduce the number of cases of violence against women.
The first priority, again, is to protect women who are extremely vulnerable. And the reason that women become so vulnerable to rape in a refugee camp situation is because they have been oftentimes separated from the other family members that would otherwise protect them.
Ben says Carry the Light to the World Foundation gets its donation from corporate groups and individuals around the world. And this story is especially timely now since the United Nations has declared 2015 the Year of Light.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Jongolei traders demand compensation as promised by the government for property destroyed in the fighting. That story is next after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you like to gamble on sports games?
Yeah, I don't like to gamble because sometimes not all the people can fulfill their promises. At the end, you end up fighting, which is not good.
Yeah, I like because it shows how commitment you are to several games, and it also shows how you are in interacting with friends, because it's just like having interaction with your friends.
No, I don't believe in gambling, so really, I wouldn't gamble, because gambling is a game of chance. Anything can happen. Personally, I like certain things. I don't like free things, actually.
I don't like doing that, you know. I don't like sports that much, but I think that's not a good thing to do, gambling.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, and now we turn to the latest on the suspect's siege in Paris. A gunman is holding several hostages at Cochere's supermarket in Paris, even as French security forces close on a town north of the city where two main suspects in the Charlie Hebdo killings are hiding up and holding a hostage. A police official says the gunman at the supermarket incident, 32-year-old Amdi Coulibaly, is believed to be the same man who shot and killed a police woman south of Paris yesterday. Authorities are also seeking a woman described as his accomplice. Police sources have linked the two to Sherif and Said Kouachi, the brothers suspected of killing 12 people in the Charlie Hebdo attack on Wednesday. French security forces say they are in contact with the brothers, who have at least one hostage with them. They are holed up in a warehouse in the town of Damartin, 40 kilometers northeast of Paris. Lisa Bryan has more from Paris.
Police have surrounded a printing house in Dammartin-en-Goële, a small town near Charles de Gaulle Airport, in an effort to capture Saïd and Sherif Kouachi, suspected of killing 12 people in Wednesday's attack on the offices of the Charlie Hebdo magazine. It's France's biggest terrorist attack in decades. Reports say the pair, in their 30s, stole a car earlier in the morning. The owner recognized their faces and informed police, who launched a chase.
Actuellement, une opération est en cours à Dammartin-en-Goële.
Speaking early Friday, French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve said an operation was underway, but he offered no details. But his spokesman later confirmed to BFM television that the two men in the printing house were almost certainly the Kouachi brothers. The town's residents have been told to stay inside. Many describe sounds of gunfire apparently exchanged with police. A local businessman called Didier told French radio he had apparently crossed paths with one of the brothers outside the printing house on Friday. The man shook his hand and said he didn't kill civilians and told him to go home. Didier described the man as heavily armed and looking like an undercover policeman. Both Kouachi brothers have links with radical Islam. The New York Times reports the older brother, Saïd, received terrorist training in Yemen in 2011. The younger, Sherif, was a former rapper who served prison time for his involvement in a Paris terrorist cell. Hundreds of French nationals have headed to join jihadist fighters in Iraq and Syria. Academic Franck Frégossi, an expert on Islam, says unlike other French jihadists, both brothers appear to have been radicalized for some time.
Une forme de radicalisme entre guillemets en famille, j'allais dire, ou entre guillemets, ce sont des frères.
Frégossi says the brothers' radicalization reflects a new trend, a sort of family event in which brothers and sisters may jointly turn to radical Islam. Police have reportedly identified the suspect in another shooting outside Paris on Thursday that killed a police officer. Authorities now believe there may be a connection between the two shootings. The Charlie Hebdo shootings have shocked France. Tens of thousands of people have gathered at rallies across the country in support of the victims and of free speech. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Traders in Jonglei state capital, Bor, say they have waited for too long for the government to honor its pledge to compensate them and rebuild the town main market. The market was destroyed more than a year ago at a high fighting of the December 2013. The Bor Traders Union say members lost millions of dollars worth of property in the violence. Jacob Achek has more from Bor.
Traders, when the government rebuilt the town's Marol market and compensated them for the losses they encountered when the rebel looted and burned down their estate in the late 2013. The Chamber of Commerce in Bor said it required nearly 13 million South Sudanese pounds to rebuild the market using iron sheets. Executive Director of Bor Trade Union, Mabir Kual, said traders across the estate lost more than 200 million South Sudanese pounds when violent spirit from Juba to Jonglei State in December 2013. Kwalu Hon Ramche Loch in Bor said he lost more than 3 million South Sudanese pound when his facilities was burned down to ashes during the violence. Jonglei State Information Minister Judy Jonglei Boyer said the state government is working with the central government in Juba to compensate the traders.
They were saying we need support from the government. And our support is to give the letter of credit from the president. So this was processed by the governor of the state and was given to the president. President approved it. That is why we are talking of letter of credit, 5 million being given to Jonglei State.
Boyere said, though the money has been approved, he is not certain when it will be released to the state government. But Kwalse traders has waited long enough.
We are going to write the letter again to the government to tell them now we are here suffering. There's no business because you don't have money. You don't have anything. The jobs have been banned all. The places are banned all. Nothing. We are still waiting for the government. We want to ask the government, when are you going to help us?
Finance Minister Dano Obango said the government is still working to identify traders affected by the violence. He also said the state must secure more funds from the World Bank and local microfinance institutions to compensate traders who lost properties and merchandise during the violence.
We met with them last year. They promised us that, yes, they have some money to empower the traders in Jonglei. And then the only obstacles was also they are a bit a challenge, was insecurity for them. This year, we will be following up with them because now, as you are aware and you are living here, there is a relative peace in Jonglei. And so we will be trying to meet them and then will also reactivate this agenda.
Obango said he has not forgotten the pledges made to traders and will work diligently this year to improve the situation of traders in the state. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
And now for some news on sports in South Sudan. The South Sudan Athletic Federation has suspended runner Gor Mading Makere. Mading is best known for competing under the Olympic flag in London in 2012. He was hoping to run for South Sudan in the 2016 Olympic in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. But the suspension may disrupt his dream. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has this report.
30-year-old Mading is in intensive training in Iten, Eldoret, in Kenya. He says he first contacted the Ministry of Sports in South Sudan in October last year to ask for funding to bring South Sudanese runners to Kenya to train with him for the 2016 Olympics. He says the ministry told him there was no funding for such initiatives. He says they told him they couldn't even give him a training stipend. So Mading launched an online campaign to raise funds so that he could train other South Sudanese and keep up his own training for the Rio Olympics. He says he also applied for a training stipend from the International Olympic Committee, or IOC. He says the Secretary General of the South Sudan Athletic Federation, Kamal John Akol, worked with him on the application for the IOC stipend. They signed all the required documents and sent them to the IOC.
The IOC said, okay, now we got all the documents. They send me a letter and they copy him into it. They said, Gore, now we got all the documents. We wait until the first week of January after people come back from the holiday. We will send you another form, that final form that you're going to sign and your secretary is going to sign. So I was waiting for that one. On the night of January 4th of this year, the secretary of the Athletic Federation called me at night.
The call did not bring good news. Instead, Mading says Kamal asked him to hand over the IOC funds to the federation. Mading says Kamal told him it is the federation's policy to share funds between all of its athletes, rather than allowing an individual like Mading to benefit from the funds. Mading says that Kamal told him that if he did not turn over the IOC money to the federation, he would be suspended.
I said I will not send such a scholarship to the federation. If the federation has concern with this case, then I will address that issue to the IOC tomorrow. And I end like that. You see, the message came back, said your message is not acceptable here in South Sudan. And the next morning, around 1 o'clock or somewhere in the afternoon, Kenyan time, he sent a letter which only tells the suspension, but it doesn't say why I got suspended.
Abdallah Bol Chol, the technical coach of the federation, says Mading was suspended because he was disrespectful in his communication with federation officials.
Our problem with him is that he said he doesn't recognize the South Sudan Athletics Federation and that we at the federation are not responsible for him. We told him, if you don't recognize us or run under us, then go and find a federation that you recognize and run for them. That's why we suspended him until we see if he changes his mind about what he said.
Charles says the federation does not want any money from him. He also says the International Olympics Committee does not hand over money to individual athletes, but to federations. Mading says he is heartbroken by all that is going on. He says he has sacrificed so much to build himself a career as an athlete, and that throughout his rise as a world-class marathon runner, he always had one goal in mind: to compete for South Sudan and do his country proud.
I was poor in the United States. Almost. The only thing I was eating from is food stamps. But I sacrificed. I turned down so many jobs offered to me because I wanted to do something for the South Sudan. The federation in South Sudan never paid penny, not even a letter to write to me after I came back from the Olympics. No one ever acknowledged what I had done. Not even a letter. Yet, I still sacrificed myself until up to now. I came to Kenya. It's my own money.
Mading says the federation is damaging relations between itself and the IOC. He says he has contacted the IOC and asked for help in resolving the dispute with the federation. Chol also says the federation is also looking for a way to end the row with South Sudan's best-known athlete.
We are making a lot of effort to solve the issue. We will be holding meetings in the coming week. As this issue has escalated and required the involvement of other parties to mediate, the International Olympics Committee asked us if they should suspend the guy, but we told them not to suspend him yet.
Edward Setimoyugu, the Director General in the Ministry of Youth and Sports, says the ministry is involved and the conflict will be resolved soon. Mading ran the marathon at the London Olympics under the Olympic flag because South Sudan did not have a recognized National Olympic Committee in 2012. He competed under the name Marial and finished 47th in a time of 2 hours, 19 minutes and 32 seconds. His personal best is just under 2 hours and 13 minutes. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you now with the song It's Your Birthday by a Nigerian musician from West Africa. If it's your birthday, make some noise. If it's your birthday. We've been listening to a Nigerian musician with the song It's Your Birthday. I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
Indeed, Michael, if it's your birthday, make some noise. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We hope you have a good weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.